Welcome to Motorsports Unplugged. This is the one place where you'll find your racing fix. Unfiltered, unbiased, and of course, unplugged. Welcome to Hell on Wheels. And now your host, Michelle Rahal.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Motorsports Unplugged Radio. I'm your host, Michelle Rahal, and I am joined by my co-host, Bill Marlowe. And it's been a every now and again you go through that period every year of dead time. You think it's dead time. We always look forward to the NASCAR tests and things like that. But, well, NASCAR is not testing. So we've got that one little bit of a week that, you know, we had the 24-hour test this past week. We're going to talk about that. But in NASCAR, everybody looks forward to that at least three-day test. It's not happening. We're going to talk about some other issues in NASCAR that, you know, we think are important, like the rule changes. How are they going to benefit these young drivers such as Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, and Ryan Blaney? And what about these crew chief swaps? How are they going to affect these teams, in particular Dale Earnhardt Jr.? What about Carl Edwards moving over to Joe Gibbs Racing? What is going to happen there? He seems to be really upbeat about it. He sees, obviously, what his ex-teammate did, you know, so far. It just seems to be one of those issues where if a guy has an opportunity, because Roush is just, let's face it, let's not kid ourselves, folks, Roush has gone backwards, been gone backwards quickly. So it was time for him to change. He saw what was going on at Gibbs, and he decided he'd change. In Formula One, Honda, it's an ongoing saga, and it seems complex to people, so we'll try to break that down for you a little bit. But in Formula One, Honda may actually, after all, be included in what they call the engine unfreeze rules, and that will allow it to develop its engine throughout the season. Also, Ferrari admit that they're late with their 2015 car and their engine development, and it may be towards the end of 2015 before they can actually really make some progress. And I'm sure that's making Sebastian Vettel really, really happy. Not. In sports car racing at Daytona, one of the Daytona prototypes got airborne for about 100 yards. Nobody was injured during testing, but does this mean the DPs have a problem that needs to be addressed? We tend to not think so, but we're going to get into that. By the way, all four of the Ligier cars, the French cars, one that is a Honda, two that are Honda powered, and one of the Judd powered cars, they ran well. The Delta Wing car, which is the strangest car to me, still it's really hard for me to get a grip on the way the car looks, but it ran well as well. So, without further ado, we're going to get into it. Bill, what do you think about all of the... First of all, the 24 hours is what? A week and a half away? I mean, are you getting excited yet? Because these LMP2 cars, they look to be pretty quick.
Well, I'm more excited about Sebring, but you're right. We're only about 2 weeks away from... less than 2 weeks away from the 24 hours. I think that the P2 cars, the Ligiers, are going to have a darn good chance of an overall win when they get to Sebring, but they're going to have a tough way to go at Daytona with that banking and long drive. It's just going to be too much top speed that the conventional DP cars have. I'm saying they got 20 mile an hour over the P2 cars in speed, and they're out there where they can utilize that speed for a greater amount of time. So I think if I had to vote, I'd probably say that we're going to give the race to the DPs to start off with at Daytona, and hopefully we'll see some real racing when we get over to Sebring in the start of the road course circuits.
You know, you and I talked about this earlier in the week, and we you had stated that, hey, you know what, these guys are – they're pretty much holding their cards pretty close to their vest in case – IMSA goes into a balance of performance type of issue before the race itself. If they decide to penalize somebody for being too fast, and you had pointed out that each of these days it appeared as if one of the manufacturers was quick on that day. for either sponsorship or to prevent IMSA from, you know, being heavy-handed and giving away too much. I think the, you know, the downforce obviously on the DP cars is pretty heavy. And I think, by the way, on that accident where the plus 50, and by the way, folks, what plus 50 means is all of the drivers in this Daytona prototype are over 50 years old. Dorsey Schrader, he's 61 years old. These guys were doing a great job, but what we found out after they reviewed the data from the crash, the right rear tire was losing air prior to that accident. The car became unstable, and what happened is it actually hit the wall before it went airborne. So I don't think, I mean, you know, in retrospect, if you look back on it and try to read tea leaves, it may very well not be a problem of them catching air naturally. It might have been a fluke accident that that happened, which is, you know, good that NASCAR's taken the, you know, taken the time and the using their brains to make those fences safer. And Bill, you pointed that out to me earlier.
Yeah, I think that I was concerned because the Fords, that's what this deal is a Ford. It was a rally, Ford Rally BMW prototype, I think, that actually got airborne. And when I heard that, I initially thought, well, something happened in traffic coming through the tri-oval. You know, you got a lot of turbulence and maybe they had some front end lift and it flipped. But then after I read the report and saw where it actually spun into the wall and then got airborne, I realized that that was the problem. It probably hit an incline at an angle and it got air on it sideways, and pretty easy to understand how they could get upset and get an air from after a hard impact with the wall.
They've already got the car back at the shop. It's stripped. They're repairing it. They're going to be ready to go. And, I mean, it's a good cause. Let's face it. It's a cure for Alzheimer's, which, oddly enough, the plus 50 guys are all doing. But it's as you said, if you walk through the paddock of one of the IMSA races, there are a lot of guys that are right there in their 50s.
Yeah. Yeah, when you go sport car racing, it's a lot of those guys who are 50s because a lot of them are paying their own way. And it's taken them a while to establish that type of cash flow in their life period. You know, Kevin Durant's probably one of the best people to, because he's a builder, he's a car builder, and he's got the experience. He won, years ago, he won the 24 hours when the Ferrari SP333, that was the car, was the famous mobile car owned by Jean-Pierre Moretti. In fact, I think they won both the 24-hour race at Daytona and then went on to win at Sebring in the same year. But he's a great builder. He's an engineer. He's a mechanical genius. So shouldn't take those guys long to get that car rebuilt. I guess he's going to replace some structural bars and do some body work on it. But they've got time. You know, he had two weeks to do it. So he'll get done.
Yeah, I have every idea that they will as well. Let's switch to NASCAR just so we can just get some continuity here for our NASCAR fans. What do you think about these crew chief swaps? I mean, what do you feel like is going? Is that really going to make a huge difference?
Well, it's going to make a difference. The chemistry is going to be there. You can pretty much expect good things from, I think, Carl Edwards. He's hungry to win. He's hungry to do a good job with his new team and represent the money that Joe Gibbs is paying him. And he's got an excellent crew chief, Darian Grubb. You know, Darian won a championship with Tony Stewart.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Stewart chose to let him go, which is one of the NASCAR mysteries to me. I don't know how you have a winning season and you think that another crew chief can do a better job for you, but they let him go and the crew chief came in and didn't get the job done. So big learning experience there. I think that Carl Edwards is going to have a great year if he gets some help from Toyota. In 2014, we know that the Toyota engine program has been a miss. They just have not had the horsepower to be competitive. And we've seen a lot of frustration from Kyle Busch because they haven't had that that horsepower and he hasn't been able to compete. I think that if Toyota can get back in the game, we'll see a competitive season for Carl Edwards and Kyle Busch over there, much like Penske had this year. You know, with that, they won a lot of races.
Well, I mean, they could if you look at the horsepower reduction, I mean, that sort of changes the dynamic of the whole thing, and we really don't know what engines are going to be affected the most by that horsepower reduction, do we?
No, because, you know, it's easy to get horsepower and but not have torque. And you know, in circle track racing, you don't shift gears. You're in fourth gear all the time.
Yeah.
And so you have to be able to tune that engine for torque curve for different tracks. And, you know, you can make it too torque, it just won't pull off. So it's going to be a clean shape, a clean slate when they come back at for 2015. After Daytona, of course, the last year's rules still are in place for Daytona and Talladega. We won't see the effect of the new rules until they get to the second race of the year, which this year is Atlanta. And I hope they have good luck with weather there.
Yeah, and that's a fast track too. That's no slow track. I mean, it's really Texas.
It's really a fast track. Actually, I think Atlanta is a bit faster because the entry into Texas is a bit more abrupt. The transition at Texas is from the flat straightaway to the banking is more abrupt, and it happens at an inopportune time for the suspension on the cup cars. But Atlanta, we're going to see they could just about with the old engine, they could just about flat foot for the qualifying lap there. So it's going to be real interesting with the reduction in horsepower and the reduction of downforce, how that's going to play out. We hope, the drivers and NASCAR and Goodyear are hoping that with the reduction of downforce, they're going to see the drivers have to lift more in corner entry to maintain control of the cars. The 2014 cars were so good that they only partially lifted at the entry of most corners, never a full lift, just a partial entry for a very brief time, and then we're back on it, which meant that you couldn't pass. It meant anybody behind you was in dirty air and didn't stand a chance on getting by you unless you bobbled or had a tire problem or difficulty. If they can make the cars handle less effectively this year, and they've got to get out of the throttle for an appreciable amount of time, we're going to see a lot better racing. And I do hope that occurs. And if it doesn't, I think we're going to see more changes from NASCAR. I think they're prepared to take more downforce away from the cars, and I think they intend to take more horsepower away from the cars as we go along.
That'll be a big difference. I mean, right now, I mean, Atlanta being as quick as it is, if the old adage, loose is fast, we're going to find out at Atlanta whether it is or isn't. But it seems like that these younger drivers adapt more quickly to that type of change than, you know, the older drivers do. And Kyle Larson has shown himself to be knocking on the door of a win, right out of the gate when he jumped into cup cars. Now, I don't know if Chase Elliott and Ryan Blaney are running a cup car at Atlanta. I don't know about that. I haven't kept up with their schedule of which races they're running in cup. I know they're both in the – is now the Xfinity series. I know they're both going to be running those full-time. Now, I did find – what I found interesting was that Chase Elliott signing with JR Motorsports – all of a sudden, Napa's back in the game on his car instead of completely pulling out. They were going to pull out under the Michael Waltrip team order scandal thing, and all of a sudden, they're back. They decided they were going to hitch their wagon to Chase Elliott and the Hendrick connection, and I which I think is a wise thing. I mean, NAPA, I think, has done a really good job of being a good sponsor and being in the game and doing what they needed to do, and I think it's benefited NAPA. And I think a young driver like Elliott, is he's got the name recognition, but he's also got the talent. So I think that that sponsorship driver combo could follow him along.
Well, I think they came back because of Bill Elliott's name and reputation. You know,
sure.
There's no cleaner NASCAR person in NASCAR than Bill Elliott. And with him being so closely kind of guiding his son along in the program, I think that's a big factor. You know, actually, they came back last year and was the full-time sponsor all year for Chase, driving for JR Motorsports in the Xfinity Series this year. But I'm sure that they're very pleased with the response and the return they got on their investment last year with how Chase was competitive and won a championship in his first year. My Lord, that was a big turnaround from the snafu they had Waltrip at Richmond 2 years ago to where they had to terminate their sponsorship early. And I think they sat out for a year and then they came back. But being tied, you know, Rick Hendrick is part of that ownership, and I think that they being a car part manufacturer supplier, NAPA saw a real need. I mean, the people that buy their parts are NASCAR people. Everybody that comes to their door is a NASCAR person, so they need to be in the game. They just need to be on the right car. And you know what? They picked it. They could not have chosen better.
All three of these drivers. Look at Kyle Larson. He's in the top team. He's been banging on the door. He came into his own in the chase, where he was really strong in the chase. And then you've got Chase Elliott. I mean, Chase Elliott is with the Hendrick organization. Then you've got Ryan Blaney, who's basically going to be a Penske driver. I mean, that's pretty strong. Those three drivers, those three young drivers have got, my God, I mean, can you imagine having had that opportunity when we were young and driving?
These teams all have a development driver development, and I think they've got people out looking for people driving go-karts and coming up through the ranks for potential guys to be developed. Kyle Larson wanted to be an IndyCar. He wanted to go the IndyCar route and wanted to be open wheel. But, you know, it's not long when they get to this level, they realize where the money is, and they sign on for the big bucks.
Yeah, I think Ganassi kind of talked him into that direction, too. I mean, that's my sense is, you know, Ganassi had a full plate over at over in IndyCar, but he saw the talent level of a Larson, and Larson's proved himself so far. Chase Elliott, I don't expect anything less from him or Ryan Blaney, for that matter. I see Blaney
well,
as
Chip Ganassi.
Go ahead.
Chip Ganassi. Talk about Chip Ganassi for a minute. Chip's a racer. He drove. He started off in SCCA and open wheel cars and then drove some Atlantics and.
Yep.
And yeah, from the Fords. And actually, I think he drove IndyCar there a couple of times.
He did. Remember that?
And kind of ran out of talent.
Well, he ran out of talent at Michigan. He was in that crash with Al Unser Jr. He was almost killed. He and Jr. collided, and it was a horrific crash that potentially could have killed both of them. And he, after that happened, I remember Ganassi saying, "You know what? The truth of the matter is, I was in it for the girls." He said, "It's not worth this. I'm out." So he and his father, you know what? That's absolutely true for a lot of the back, you know, the mid level and back drivers. Some of those guys are in it for the glory, what they can get out of it. And he admitted it. I admired him for admitting it and saying, "That was scary. That was over my head. I don't want to die this young, you know, for this reason." So, you know, he and his father started ownership, and then he took over, and the rest is history. So
I've got one more comment, but maybe you want to do a break before I go into it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing to do. We'll talk about, when we come back from the other side of the break, we're going to talk about the Honda deal, because that involves Ferrari, Honda, Mercedes, Renault, and just a complete Formula One seemingly in disarray. But we'll talk about that on the other side of the break. I'm Michelle Rahal with Bill Marlowe. See you in just a minute. Hi, this is Michelle Rahal, and you've been listening to Motorsports Unplugged Radio. But did you know that we have a website with world-class automotive writers, including Steve Wade, our editor-in-chief and Motorsports Hall of Fame winner for journalism? We deliver opinions and editorials you won't find anywhere else. From Formula One to NASCAR to IndyCar and sports car racing, www.motorsportsunplugged.com, your online destination from the real insiders. Also, take a look at www.thedrivechannel.com, where you'll see automobiles of all kinds, exotic, supercars, unique cars. We produce review videos and commentary that involves one thing we all love, cars. With 7 million views and over 200 videos, stop by and become a Drive Channel fan today. That's www.thedrivechannel.com, and coming soon, a full website with written commentary and opinions on everything automotive. Stop by and see us. Do you love shooting firearms? Are you one of the millions who enjoy shooting sports? If you are, we want you to go to www.theshootingchannel.com for your firearms fix. New models, reviews, and commentary by some of the firearm world's best writers. If you're a legal gun owner or want to be, the Shooting Channel is for you. From home and self-defense to hunting and target shooting, seasoned pro, or if you're new at it. If it's about shooting, it's at www.theshootingchannel.com. And stay tuned for the Shooting Channel radio show coming soon. And now, back to Motorsports Unplugged with Gene Boyer, Michelle Rahal, and Bill Marlowe. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michelle Rahal. I'm your host, and joining me is my co-host, is Bill Marlowe. When we before the break, we were talking NASCAR, what the rule changes meant to young drivers like Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, Ryan Blaney. We were talking about what the changes were going to mean to people, even like Carl Edwards. Also the crew chiefs, all the crew chief changes. And Bill, you've got some, you know, you've got a lot of inside information on what goes on in NASCAR. People call you, you call them. Tell us what you know, Osage.
Starting back with Chip Ganassi's team, Chip's a real people person, and that's important at the top of the line. About 4 years ago, he hired Max Seba to be his director of competition over there on the Cup side. And Max took a year to see what was going on, and then he changed the engine program over from Earnhardt Childress Motors to the Hendrick Motor program, start getting better chassis in-house and start turning that program around. And then he brought Max is the person that brought young Kyle on board. And, you know, Juan Pablo had been there for years, and I'm sure that was a difficult decision for Chip Ganassi to tell him that he was going to release him and replace him with a rookie, Kyle Larson. But all of this has come from Max Seba, so we kind of need to that's a person who brought a lot to the table there. Max, I think you know, he used to run the Trans Am for Roush back years ago when they were successful. Roush, Trevor Bayne's going full-time this year, and his crew chief is going to be Bob Osborne. Glad to welcome Bob back. Bob was Roush's years ago, maybe 6 years ago, he was the head engineer at Roush Racing before it was Roush Speedway. And Bob Osborne ran into, he became crew chief after being engineer, became a crew chief and had a lot of success with Carl Edwards. That might have been Carl Edwards' most successful years. And then he had a serious health problem and had to drop out of NASCAR for about 2 years. And he's well, and he's back in the program now. Glad to see Bob Osborne going to be back in the pits. And he's going to be a real asset to the Roush Fenway racing operation over there. One big doubt I've got is going to be Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s new crew chief.
Yeah.
Guys, I just don't know about that. Chemistry is so important, and the ability for them to be on the same wavelength is so important. And it's kind of hard for people to get to learn Dale Earnhardt Jr., so I don't know whether they're going to click right off the bat or it's going to take a while.
I think that may be the
you
issue.
Got a comment there?
Didn't he take Chase Elliott to the championship? Isn't he the
right.
chief Chase Elliott? Yeah. So I think
that's
it might
right.
be a matter of it may be more on Earnhardt's side of the fence than it is on this guy. I mean, that's
yeah,
just.
Yeah, I think Earnhardt. Oh, yeah, I hate to say anything about that, but it's always a shot in the dark when you start dealing with crew chiefs with Dale Jr. there. You just don't know what you're going to get. As a result, you can bring the best crew chief in the world in, but if they can't communicate, they won't get the job done. And communication is really important there, but probably more so with Dale Jr. than most any other driver out there.
I think one of the advantages these young drivers like Chase and Ryan Blaney have is that they were brought up in that atmosphere, and they were taught that by their fathers. Exactly how that works. So somebody coming along that didn't have that, maybe perhaps not that natural skill set of communication, was taught that. So in fact, you know, and Dale Jr.'s was cut short, obviously, and it was a different time, a different era, when Dale Sr. was on board and was still alive. And being able to pass that kind of thing down, how to communicate with a crew chief and how to develop that chemistry, it appears as if these two guys, Chase Elliott and Ryan Blaney, are able to do that, and perhaps Kyle Larson, as he was moving up through the ranks, was sort of nurtured that way. Times are different.
Times are different, and I think we're going to bring that magic back together on the five car, the Hendrick five car with Casey Kane. Keith Rodden's coming back. Keith was the engineer for KC, and it had a lot to do with their success in years past. Last year, he went over to the Ganassi team to be a crew chief for Jamie McMurray. And with all the problems that KC underwent this year, I mean, he just ran piss poor. That's all you can say about it. I think they realized they needed to do a change, that they needed to get another guy in with different ideas. And I'm pretty tickled to death that they're bringing Keith Rodden back, and he's going to be the crew chief on the five car this year. I'm expecting big things from Case Kane. He knows he's got to get it done, and I think he's got the tools and the toolbox to get it done this year.
Well, I remember years ago, you're the one that brought Casey Kane's name up because you were engineering a car that he was in. And you said, you keep your eye on this guy. He said, because you said, this guy's going big. And obviously he has the talent. And you can see the angst on his face. I mean, he wears his heart on his sleeve. You can see the angst in his face when things aren't right. You know, he doesn't have that Formula One no emotion type of personality. So hopefully that does work out for Casey, because Casey's a hell of a driver.
He is. When we had him on the Great Clips car, the nationwide car, I told the crew chief, Wes Ward, that he was going to be a superstar. And Wes told Casey that right there in front of him. He said, Marlo says you're going to be a superstar. And you know what? 1 year later, in May, exactly 1 year later, Casey's picture was on the front page of the USA Today. They were getting ready to have the Charlotte races and the Indy races, and he was predominantly on the front page of the USA Today. I kid him about that every once in a while. That's about all I've got for the NASCAR today.
Well, all right, so we're going to break down. Here's what the deal is in Formula One. Honda sat out a year. When they changed, here's how it all started. I'm just going to give you this brief as I can. The engine rules. They changed power plants in 2014 from the V8 engines that had what was known as the KERS system, which was kinetic energy recovery. Under braking, it would get a little more energy to be able to put towards the horsepower of the engine. Well, that was simple enough. But what they did in 2014 is they went to V6 engines with a single turbo, and it was a super hybrid. So in other words, you had two types of power that were being joined together. And the way they wrote those rules is they had to declare their power plants with no changes in February of 2014. Well, Renault and Mercedes and Ferrari did just that. So they were stuck with what they had throughout the year. That didn't really work out the way everybody thought it was going to. Honda had a deal that they were going to come in, but McLaren had a contract that ran through 2014 with Mercedes. Honda really couldn't come into the sport until 2015. Now, Honda, the FIA ruled that Honda would be forced to not be able to change. They'd have to declare their engines in 2015, just like the other manufacturers did in 2014, and they wouldn't be able to change it. Well, what happened is 2015, they're allowing in-season development now for Ferrari, Mercedes, and for Renault. So they're able to work on their engines as they go through the season, and they're saying that they rule that Honda could not because it was brand new. But Honda has protested that, and the FIA is now reconsidering. And I have every indication in my mind, knowing Formula One, they're going to allow Honda to do it. Why? I think it's because last year in 2014, when they had to declare their engines, all the other manufacturers, they were allowed five engines for the season. In 2014, in 2015, these teams are only going to be allowed to use four engines throughout the year, only four. And now Honda's saying, well, wait a minute. We're coming in under the 2014 rule if you're not letting us develop our engine, but you're going to limit us to four engines. And that's not fair. And I think they have a point. Because last week, you and I were talking about it, and then I started to think about that. And I thought, you know what, they've got a point, and obviously the FIA thinks they have a point because they've been having meetings on it. And coming out of Japan, the Japanese usually are stone-faced. They're sad and unhappy. You know, those were the adjectives used to describe how they were in the initial meeting. But in this last meeting, they were a lot more on the side of, we've made progress. So I have a feeling that we might actually have in-season development for Honda. And if that's the case, we might have a show. Is it going to be a huge show? No. But remember that Mercedes is the one that was in the lead. They can develop too, but the other people know the mistakes they've made, and I think they're all going to start to close the gap. Whether Honda can take what they think they know from 2014, what they may have learned from the McLaren-Mercedes relationship, if that works out, then McLaren-Honda could be at least competitive in the 2015 season. What do you think?
I think that Honda's going to come out of the box a lot better than Ferrari and Renault did. They've had a year and a half to examine the Mercedes engine. Can't forget that. McLaren had that Mercedes engine 24/7, and you know Honda's engineers have bruised it all over. I do agree with your viewpoint that the rules aren't the same. If they made Honda declare their engine as to the 2014 rules, then Honda needs to be able to use the same amount of engines. That would be five engines for the year. And that's a big factor because several of these teams didn't make it all year. They had to breach the rule and took heavy penalties for that.
That's right, yeah.
I think that we have to be careful. It is possible that Honda could come out of the box and be competitive from the get-go, and that would be a real shame if we didn't have seen that beforehand. I would say let them run the first third of the season or the first 2 months or the first six, three races and see what their performance level is and then make the decision on where they fall at. One thing that they could tell right away is have them produce the engine and have the FAA look at it. And if it's got a split shaft where the exhaust of the turbo is on one side and the intake is on the other, a la Mercedes, that's a good indication to me that they are going to be heads up on the other guys. And when they go to testing here in February, I think we got three tests coming up, F1 tests coming up in February.
Yeah, February 1st.
I'm really excited to see if Ferrari and Renault have redone their engines so that they can split turbo compressor set up. If they haven't, they're all is lost. The only way they're going to gain the horsepower and be competitive is to go ahead, bite the bullet, and do that split combination, because you got to have that cool air going in to make horsepower. They say that Mercedes has 54 horsepower. That's because they got cool air on the intake side. Plus, they got packaging improvements with moving that turbo, splitting it over. They've got ability to shrink in the body panels in their cars and effectively have better aerodynamics than the other competitors they've got. Yeah,
well, here's
it's going to be interesting to see. 2015, which engines had the split? That's the first thing I want to see. And I would expect to see every one of them to have the split turbo concept.
Yeah, we're not going to know until and they're so secretive, we won't know until they they're going to unveil the McLaren and the Ferrari at the very end of this month, but then they go straight into testing after that. I doubt they're going to show the engine in the unveiling of the car, and they may not leak any of it out.
They're going to try to keep that covered up as long as they can.
Now, here's something, though, that's come across the wire, is that Marcioni, the head of Fiat Chrysler, which basically owns Ferrari, has said they've already started to make what appears to be almost an apology, a preparing everyone for what might not happen. Ferrari right now appears to be as it was 30 years ago, and that's a Chinese fire drill. I mean, it appears as if they've had three different team principals in the last 15 months. They've got a new technical guy who is obviously good, but word coming out of Maranello is they're not, it's not as good as they were hoping, that the aerodynamics weren't as effective as they had hoped it to be. So they've got to rush to get that together, and he's already apologized, Marcioni has, he's already apologized that they got a late start in developing their 2015 car. And, he said they had a disaster of a season in 2014 and organizations get lazy. He said it was time to bring change. Well, the road car side of their business had the best year it ever had last year. But he said in order to make that, and then here's what's going to happen. Either A, they're going to come out of the box, they're going to be fast with Vettel, and they're going to appear to be geniuses, or they're going to fall right on their butt. One of the two. I don't think there's much of mediocrity there. There's not much in between. They're either going to get it right or they're going to get it dead wrong. And part of that is because they've changed so much. One thing I'll give Marcioni, he is able to run multiple businesses across the world and call it pretty much on par. But then again, he does run Fiat, and that's not exactly the shining diamond of the automotive world.
If Ferrari sat over there and they come out here at the first test and they don't have a split compressor turbo set up, then they have been sitting on their butts for the last 8 months. But who would have, who can expect that? They replaced the engineering team, but the engineering team that was replaced were not incompetent. They knew what they had to do. Once they saw, it's pretty easy to see a guy beat you and realize what he's done to beat you and realize where you went wrong. The trick is, how fast can you recover? And they should have. They've had plenty of time. I mean, Ferrari does everything inside the transmissions, the engines, the bodies, the aero. Everything's internal. So why would you possibly sit around for 8 months twiddling your thumbs? That they must come out with that split turbo setup. If they haven't, then I'm going to give up on Ferrari until they bring another Formula One formula change for engines, chassis.
It's really going to be interesting to see what happens as in 2015, because that is really going to call all the shots for what happens in 2016 to whether or not they change an engine formula altogether. And I think that's important to note. These guys didn't Ferrari, in the middle of changing all of these people, you know, got a late start on developing the car and the engine technology. So who knows what they're going to do. But Renault got a lot of heat from the get-go from Red Bull. I mean, they really got hammered really hard. So I think Renault may very well be the one that comes out quicker than Ferrari. They were already with Ricciardo. They were already fast enough. They were the best. You might as well call them the best of the rest. Mercedes was so far ahead. But Mercedes can only go so far. I mean, there's only so much you can do with getting in this set of rules, and the other people begin to catch up. So what I think is going to happen is we're going to see closing down on Mercedes, even though they're allowed to develop in season as well.
Why haven't we heard that Ferrari is working with somebody on the continent for engine development that actually worked with Red Bull? I'm sure they've got a consulting company, an engineering company over there that's in bed with them now. And they probably are kind of
hitting
them.
And that was Renault that did.
I mean, I just can't see Ferrari going 8 months down the road and not realizing that they got to get that turbo compressor issue changed back. That's the key. That's the foundation to rebuilding that program. But as I remember when I was a young kid, 10, 12 years old, you know, I read everything I could about F1 racing and sports car racing. The 24 Hours of Le Mans was a big thing. I seem to remember, as we're talking now, Michelle, that Ferrari was one of the last race teams to go from drum brakes to disc brakes. And I believe they're also one of the last cars to go from front engine to rear engine cars.
Yeah, I think Jags actually introduced the disc brake into the Le Mans series. Listen, we're going to why don't we take a break right now, and we'll be back on the other side. I'm Michelle Rahal, your host, and my co-host is Bill Marlowe. This is Motorsports Unplugged, and we will see you on the other side of the break. Hi, this is Michelle Rahal, and you've been listening to Motorsports Unplugged Radio. But did you know that we have a website with world-class automotive writers, including Steve Wade, our editor-in-chief and Motorsports Hall of Fame winner for journalism? We deliver opinions and editorials you won't find anywhere else. From Formula One to NASCAR to IndyCar and sports car racing, www.motorsportsunplugged.com, your online destination from the real insiders. Also, take a look at www.thedrivechannel.com, where you'll see automobiles of all kinds, exotic, supercars, unique cars. We produce review videos and commentary that involves one thing we all love, cars. With 7 million views and over 200 videos, stop by and become a Drive Channel fan today. That's www.thedrivechannel.com. And coming soon, a full website with written commentary and opinions on everything automotive. Stop by and see us. Do you love shooting firearms? Are you one of the millions who enjoy shooting sports? If you are, we want you to go to www.theshootingchannel.com for your firearms fix. New models, reviews, and commentary by some of the firearm world's best writers. If you're a legal gun owner or want to be, the Shooting Channel is for you. From home and self-defense to hunting and target shooting, seasoned pro, or if you're new at it. If it's about shooting, it's at www.theshootingchannel.com. And stay tuned for the Shooting Channel radio show coming soon. And now, back to Motorsports Unplugged with Gene Boyer, Michelle Rahal, and Bill Marlowe. Welcome back to Motorsports Unplugged. I'm Michelle Rahal, and we were talking about Formula One. How much more do you want to go on Formula One before we jump to the sports cars?
Only thing I'd like to say about Formula One is, again, if any of the three other manufacturers show up the test and they don't have that split turbo with the turbo on the exhaust side and the compressor up on the front of the engine where it's got cool air going in, that's the basis for getting any of their problems correct. I'm sure that Honda's going to have that set up. And I bet Honda's got a more compact engine than Mercedes does by the time they get on board. I would certainly expect to see Ferrari and Renault having that split turbo compressor concept if they haven't, all is lost for the year.
You know, I did pick up that Williams, and I'm trying to remember the engineer's name, but the Williams engineer said that their sector times, that they compared their sector times with that of Mercedes, and the sector times were not dramatically different in the cornering. It depended on the track, but by and large, the cornering where they had multiple corners, they were awfully close together. So their chassis, they didn't feel like were that far off. You know, hopefully. I do expect to see Williams do quite well this coming year in 2015. They have an awfully good platform to bounce from based on what they did last year in 2014. So we'll see how that goes. And it's one of those things where, next week, obviously, we're going to concentrate on the 24 hours coming up because that's a big deal. But, you know, the anticipation of this Formula One test has really got me intrigued. Let's just put it that way. Because the 2015 season is going to tell us whether or not that power plant idea is going to live or die. It's going to tell us a lot. And that decision will be made 5 months into the racing, I think, as to whether or not that changes.
I suspect they're trying to get the manufacturers they don't have 5 months. If they're going to do it in 2016, they've got to make the decision right now.
Yeah, you know, you're right.
I think that they're trying to do is that I think we're going to see them concede to Honda the 2015 roads, let them get on board with that. If Honda will go ahead and concede to a different engine in 2016. I think they're playing politics right there.
And, I mean, let's face it. We've said it. We can't, say it enough. I mean, they absolutely, Formula One is the ultimate in political play with lots of money behind it. So they need the manufacturers in there. It's like Le Mans. If you're going to run LMP1, then you better be a manufacturer. If you're not, you're nowhere. You're nobody because you're not going to have that kind of money. You're not going to have that kind of technical resource. So we've got we've done the tests. We've seen the Delta Wing do fairly well, and if it's got speed, but also you're not the only one that thinks that everybody's kind of holding back. I read sort of a shakedown on the entire weekend of testing, and the mood in the paddock, almost everyone in the paddock is saying, hey, everybody's holding back, which would include themselves, that everybody's holding a little bit back into their chest so that IMSA isn't pushed into that, balance of power sort of thing. So we really don't know. I mean, if you stay that Honda power plant that's in the Liège, that's an awfully durable and powerful power plant. It would have to come. I'm not sure whether it would come from. I don't know about the Judd that's in the other Liège, and I don't know about the Skyactiv diesel that's in the Mazda. We both know that if all of these cars are fairly close in time, that reliability becomes a huge issue, and the amount of time, and who can conserve but go the fastest, because the 24 hours, I mean, you and I both remember, it used to be a slow start and just make it through the night. Not anymore. They're racing like cats and dogs from the drop of the green flag. I mean, they're going as hard as they can for 24 hours, so it may be the most durable car that can stay the closest that's going to make the difference. I mean, if history's anything, it's going to, you're looking at at the regular DPs, of course. But it may very well be that that Honda or the even the diesel from Mazda is going to, you know, be a potential winner. I don't think the Delta Wing is going to make it. There's just a feeling I have. Not that it's a bad car or bad design. It is but ugly, but nonetheless, it's got a Nissan power plant in it. It may very well may make it, but it just appears the drivers are saying it drives like a formula car, like an open wheel car, more than it does a prototype. Now, the one comment that I did hear that was really overarching everyone else's comments is that the Ligiers were so comfortable to drive that the cockpits of those cars were so built for the driver, and they were so comfortable in them that they felt like they would be less tired in these cars, and they would be able to stay on it longer and harder. And that makes a lot of sense. If you stop and think about it, you know how hard it is. I mean, in any kind of race that's I've been in a couple of endurance races where there were driver changes, but it really does take a lot out of you as to how comfortable you are and how they match the drivers up, even though they do have seat inserts. But these new style LMP2 car coupes are built for the driver to be comfortable. So that could have, I think that might come into play as well. But I don't think anybody's going to know anything until, as you say, they roll through tech.
When I first started in NASCAR as an engineer on the cup side, I was really excited. We used to do a ton of testing. We used to test about all month in January at Talladega and then go between Talladega and Daytona before the 500 race. And I was all pumped up, and I was talking to Travis Carter, who was the car owner for Jimmy Spencer and the Winston. Remember Winston, who sponsored the series? Winston actually had their own cup car, and Travis Carter was he was listed as the owner of it. And I was talking to Travis one day and predicting unknowingly what I had seen and who I thought was going to be fast when we went back for the race. And Travis said, "Bill, let me tell you something. You don't know anything until you see those cars go through the room of doom down there." And that's what's happened this week. All these cars, they haven't had to go through any inspection. They've been able to fudge the rules. So we don't know how much horsepower or downforce or fuel they were actually running when they sit their fast times. And just don't know what mission they were on every day. There's two practice periods per day, and there was a different car, different manufacturer fast every day. So that tells me there was a lot of experimentation going on.
Experimentation, yeah.
I think when we go back, we're going to see the pole position go between the EcoBoost forward engine DPs and the Corvette DPs. And I think that the little three-wheeler And the Mazda diesel car, they just don't have enough power to get it done, and we're going to see them back in the pack and probably not competitive at Daytona. I think that Mazda's putting a minimum amount of money. They're not a big manufacturer. They're a Team Nexi manufacturer, and they just don't have the money to put into the sport right now. And I think they're just on a fact-finding mission. They see the future as a diesel engine, and I think they're trying to promote the development of that and get ready to introduce a diesel engine in their new SUV here in the United States. And they already have it in the Mazda 6. It's their really nice sedan. And it's a great little motor, but it just doesn't make the horsepower that these P2 cars, other P2 cars make right now.
No, the LMP1 cars did. Remember the Audis? When they introduced their diesel, man, that thing had, you know, enough torque to pull King Kong out of a cat house. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it was fast.
Yeah.
And people, it took them a while to get used to it, but you've noticed everyone has moved away from the diesels in LMP1 and gone back to a different type of power unit, more Formula One-like. Or rather, Formula One is more like the LMP1 cars. And now it seems like, they do have that diesel. And, yeah, I think for manufacturing purposes, you're absolutely correct. They're using that engine in LMP2, but Mazda has a huge grassroots racing effort that extends all the way from their Miatas all the way up to Indy Lights.
More Miatas racing every week than anything else. But it's going to be fun. But, you know, when you come out of the infield and steer up onto the banking at Daytona, you've got a long ways to go on the banking to come back around, even though you do have a chicane. But you've got a long ways to go at top speed. And if you got 20 mile an hour in your pocket, that's just hard to beat 24 hours. I think we're going to see a DP car win there again. I'd really like to see the P2 cars win, but hopefully they'll be super competitive when they get over to the second race of the Sebring.
Yeah, Sebring will be a whole nother story. I agree with you there. If there's a horsepower and somewhat of an aerodynamic advantage on the DPs, I don't see an aerodynamic advantage in the DPs. I do see a horsepower and, as you say, torque. It is getting out of that corner and making that horsepower count that's probably giving them the 20-mile-per-hour advantage on those straightaways to be able to get out of the corner, all the torque that they have. Because you give the Honda is a turbocharged engine, and that's a four-cylinder turbocharged engine, twin turbo, but still a four-cylinder engine. It's not going to have the torque that those V8s are going to have. So, you just got to sit back and we're going to see what happens, and we'll see if they go into a balance of power sort of a notion after. And IMSA could even do that during, after the first practices are done.
Yeah, well, those Corvettes got V8s in them, and, they play roads. They have different inlet sizes for each one of those manufacturers, or the engine manufacturers, and they can easily change that. But I think it's kind of predetermined. Those deep GM and Ford are going to be big players this year. It's their last year, and they're hoping to they would be IMSA, two-door, or NASCAR ultimately owning the series. They want to keep GM playing next year, and they're going to have to go to a P2 car to do it if they want to run in the top class. So there's going to be some give and take, and I think the rules will be candid in the GM's favor for the rest of the year, or at least enough to give them.
I think you're right. I mean, it's the last year of the DPs. Let's face it, for financial reasons, they want to see that come out on top as it moves into the LMP2 category of coupes. So, but anyway, we're at the end of the show, and I've been really pleased to be joined by Bill Marlowe, as always. We were able to talk NASCAR. We're able to talk Formula One and the sports cars, and next week we're going to be doing the same thing, but we're going to put a little bit of an emphasis, I think, on the sports cars, because if I'm not mistaken, it is that weekend, right? It will be not.
Yeah.
It's not this week. It's the following weekend. That's when it starts. So we want to do that, and perhaps we can get a special guest on from IMSA to talk with us and join us and give us some insight as to what may happen, and obviously Formula One will be an ongoing saga. I'm Michelle Rahal with Motorsports Unplugged, and for Bill Marlowe, we'll see you next week.